You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Razzalon.
Thank you for being here.
Me? I'm always here.
Everyone.
Oh, yeah. Those people. Hi.
Hello.
Are they going to be on the podcast?
They're a part of it.
A vital part of it, an important part of it, an essential part of it.
Absolutely.
Cool. Let's start. Today, we're going to be talking about the first serial of the 22nd season of Doctor Who, Attack of the Cybermen, which consists of two 45-minute episodes that aired from January 5th, 1985 to January 12th, 1985, 9 months after the last episode aired.
That feels about how long since it's been since we've watched this episode.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
Check him out at MatthewGolden.net. 9 months after the twin dilemma. So you had that real shit show, and then you're like, well, we're not going to see you for almost a year. I hope you stick around. I wouldn't have.
I would have. You're going to watch the new season when it comes out.
That's true. I'm doing it now. You're right. When you're right, you're right.
Yeah.
So before we talk about this episode, is there anything we want to talk about in real life? First off, I want to say today's Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's
Day.
It's
not for you. You guys are in the future. I'm not sure when this episode goes up.
You're the one who's in charge of all that.
Let me take a look at my notes real quick, because we might have been doing this for 6 years. Our anniversary of the podcast is my birthday.
It's your birthday, March 4th.
It's March 4th. And I think this episode might be going up around then. This episode goes up the day before my birthday. So tomorrow's my birthday.
Tomorrow is Joe's birthday, and tomorrow is also the, did you say 6 years?
6 year. Yeah, 6 year anniversary of this podcast.
That is absolutely absurd.
6 years, six doctors, baby. Also, speaking of Doctor Who, there's something I'd like to talk about. I wrote an article for a website called The Dip, that's D-I-P-P, in which I ranked all of the phallic props on Doctor Who.
You came up with the top 10 most phallic.
Yeah, the fallacy of Doctor Who. You can see that at thedip.com. And again, it's dip with two P's. And I may have another article up already. It's basically theorizing that Star Wars is about to do another spinoff called Star Wars Younglings, and it's basically the Muppet Babies, but with Star Wars characters. That might already be up too, so I don't know. Again, I'm recording this in the past, and the future has arrived for you. Go check those out. I'm writing articles now and getting paid for it. I got paid to write dick jokes. It's great.
Magnificent.
That's pretty much all I got going on. Oh, happy Valentine's Day. Love you.
Happy Valentine's Day.
It's Valentine's Day. It's the podcast anniversary. It's my birthday.
There's a lot going on.
There's a new season of Doctor Who we're about to talk about.
Happy birthday in the future, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Because you're going to forget.
It always... here's the thing. It always comes so soon after Valentine's Day. I've never forgotten.
Oh, you forget every
year. I've never forgotten your birthday. I have gotten to the last week of February and gone, shit, it's the last week of February already. Shit. But I've never forgotten your birthday.
Don't believe. No, I don't think you've forgotten.
No. I maybe have realized, like, on the 1st of March that it's the 1st of March. But I've always had, like, plans by then. I just was like, oh, the thing that I, like, theoretically, at, like, the 1st of February was like, I'm going to do this. I've done nothing. I've done nothing to accomplish it.
But you got plans for me this year. You already told me you got plans.
I do have plans.
Even future me that's alive as this episode premieres won't know.
I mean,
it's tomorrow.
Yeah, but I told you.
Yeah, you did.
I'm bad at surprises. We have got to talk about the episode.
Let's talk about this.
We are just waffling around.
This is the first proper full season of The Sixth Doctor. Let's dive into it. Let's talk about Attack of the Cybermen. So first off, before we get into the episodes proper, again, it's been 9 months. I find that mind-blowing. Also, this is the first time that this whole season is 45-minute episodes instead of half-hour episodes.
2:45?
2:45 episodes for this one. All of them are two, except for we're going to have one that's three episodes. So 3 45-minute episodes. That's the two doctors.
Hmm.
Every other serial this season is 45-minute episodes. Next season also is going to be a bit of a change, too. They go back to half-hour episodes, but they're going to have a season arc.
Oh.
Trial of a Time Lord. But let's talk about this episode, Attack of the Cybermen, episode 1.
I don't remember this shit.
Which I have called Prisoner of the Cybermen. We start off in a tunnel. An old tunnel. There's some workers down there doing stuff. Because you gotta have, I mean, this is Cybermen. We know. It says it in the damn title. You gotta have Cybermen in the tunnels.
Right.
This serial is very much about calling back a lot of, like, classic images and stuff.
A lot of classic images, a lot of, like, old lore.
It gets criticized a lot for it, but I don't mind it.
Really?
Yeah.
Usually people love that shit. Usually people eat that shit up.
I think there's like this thing of, especially Doctor Who in this era, of getting like, hey, we mentioned a thing, and that's it.
But not doing any real work beyond that.
Yeah, not really doing anything with it, but I don't mind. I honestly feel like this serial should have been the first Six Doctor story, not the last one.
Right. Because
there is so many, like, iconic things, especially calling back the First Doctor.
I was going to say, like, he's giving a very First Doctor performance in this one.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, like, there's, I mean, spoilers, it's going to be the junkyard and stuff like that, and it's like, that's all, like, the first episode of Doctor Who. It would make sense to put that in your first episode of a new Doctor.
They almost have to do it since they, like, ended the last one, like, I'm the Doctor whether you like it or not. Fuck you.
See you in 9 months, fuckos.
So now they come back and they're like, no, really.
Please watch the show.
I really am. Look, I'm in the junkyard. Look, it's the show.
I'm pretty sure this show gets canceled halfway through this season. I guess it comes back for the 7th Doctor, but it gets canceled.
Does it? It got canceled between 6 and 7?
I think there was like a year gap or something. I'm not 100% positive about that, but I need to double check. But
or like go on hiatus or something.
I think it gets canceled and then they bring it back. That's why there's that. I'm pretty sure that's why there's going to be that whole song that Colin Baker does. That's like basically We Are the World, but it's about like the Doctor in distress.
Oh.
I think that's what causes that. And it saves the show?
The song does?
No, no. I don't know. I don't think it hurts. I don't know. We'll see. I'm not 100%.
Well, we'll gain that knowledge when we get there.
Yeah, probably.
Not a moment before.
I look at the Wikipedia articles for the episodes after I watch the episodes, not before. But yes, there's some workers in a tunnel. They wander around for a while because they're like, hey, we have 45 minutes an episode.
We got a lot of time to kill.
Yeah, they can slow down the pace, they feel like. They don't have to build to a cliffhanger every 20 minutes.
Yeah, which is nice.
Even though I was watching this to make GIFs, there is a cliffhanger-y type moment 20 minutes in. So, like, the first Cybermen appears 20-something minutes into this serial.
I imagine habits episode. Are hard to break. It just, you're like, I don't know why. It just feels like here on the 20th page, there ought to be some kind of very dramatic moment.
Well, I watched the making of, and the writer of this episode said that, like, was talking about how, like, we didn't have to work till it was a cliffhanger. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then I was making the gifs, and I was like, well, you still fucking did it. Speaking of the writer, this is credited to somebody who didn't actually write the episode at all.
It's a woman, right?
Yeah, it's the actual writer's friend. Paula Moore.
Why did that happen?
It was actually written by Eric Sayward, who was the script editor. And due to various, like, technical reasons, he could not commission himself to write an episode.
It's like a union thing? Or?
Yeah, it's some sort of loophole so that he could write the episode. So, it actually is written by Eric Sayward. There is some contention about it. Not that she wrote it. It's pretty much given that she had all to do with it. But there is Ian Levine, who is the continuity advisor, who basically is just this guy that's like, hey, you should put in all these references. And he sometimes gets them wrong. He claims that he wrote a good chunk of this. And Eric Sayward was like, he said I should use Cybermen. That's about all he said. I wrote this shit. So I'm not going to give him a credit for it just because he's like, you should use Cybermen.
I mean, I believe that. How many times have people come up to you and been like,
oh God, it happens all the time.
You should do this concept. And then that's like, right? Let's make it.
Hey, you know how like this video on YouTube's really popular? We should do that. Thanks. Do you have any, like, ideas beyond that? Beyond that you want to do the thing that everyone else is doing? What's your take on it? Nothing? Get out of my face! God, that's so annoying.
Boy, you're not holding on to any anger or bitterness at all, are you?
Oh, only a little. There was a time when I was writing a show that was based on Kung Fu movies. I had a character that was like a Kung Fu host, movie show host. And someone just came up to me and was like, showing me videos of people doing karate?
Let's do that.
And just said, you should do something with this. And I was like, what? And they had nothing more to say. They're just like, you know, just like this video. You know, it was just people doing karate.
You know the concept of martial arts? You should do something with that.
It's the worst.
Anyway,
it's
got to talk about this.
Yeah,
cereal.
We haven't gotten past the first scene, which is just people wandering around in a tunnel, which honestly, it lasts about as long as this rambling has gone.
I'm going to be real honest with you, folks. It's been 2 weeks since we watched this one.
Yeah.
we're relying heavily on the notes, and that's why we're so wanting to go off course.
So these workers are going around, they're confused because there's a wall where there shouldn't be a wall, and then one of them sort of wanders off and then gets attacked by some, like, pixel effects, like some computer effects. Basically, there's just, like, a filter drawn on, and it's, like, green and pink and video effects, and he's like, ah! And then he's attacked. I guess it's the Cyberman POV. We don't see Cyberman for 20 minutes, as previously I mentioned. So, then we go to the TARDIS, where we see the Doctor messing around inside the roundels.
He's fixing the chameleon circuit. Delightful.
It sort of works.
Sort of.
There was, like, maybe this idea that they were going to keep it fixed.
Yeah.
At the end of the serial, it turns back into the TARDIS, the police box, and then it just stays the police box. They never mess around with it again after this point.
Really?
After the serial. I mean, they maybe do it once or twice, and I don't know. Have they ever done it in New Who? I don't remember.
Can't think of a time that they did, but...
So I guess it's just broke again? I don't know.
I honestly think that the TARDIS just likes it.
It's just like your favorite shirt.
Yeah.
So Perry comes out and she's wearing a new pink outfit. How do we feel about this outfit?
Yes, the outfit that I remember seeing.
I'm surprised you've forgotten it. I'll send you a link. She wears two outfits in this serial. It's very pink.
I do remember this outfit. It's very... pink.
It's very pink.
It's pretty low cut.
It's pretty tight.
I will say.
It's colorful.
It's cute. It doesn't look comfortable.
No.
It doesn't look like something a person would choose to wear.
She probably didn't. It's probably wardrobe. Anyway, she's worried that the Doctor is unstable and is continuing to act very poorly. Doctor, you're still stable. Like, her entire performance is that. Also, I will say this scene, there is like some like banter back and forth that's not bad, honestly, which is the Doctor, you know, saying like, I'm fine now and you're just gonna have to get used to me, but it's not as like aggressively fuck you as the last episode. It's more just like, it's more casual.
Right.
He even like, he's like, you have nothing to worry about with me. And then like boops her on the nose and it's kind of cute. But like the music behind it is ominous as fuck. And I don't know why. It's like, doom, da, doom, doom. It's like, why are you being so ominous?
There's a lot of weird music cues in this one.
And then there's one music cue that is used repeatedly. Oh, boy. We'll get to that.
Oh, boy.
So anyway, the Doctor's like, let's go someplace relaxing because it seems like we've had too much excitement. Let's go somewhere nice. And so he presses a button on the console and it tilts and everything goes wrong and they start speaking in slow motion. Just things go wrong in the TARDIS as they so often do. Next scene, we see a car pull up outside of a city building. A bank, I believe, or something. I don't know. Something. And we see Litten. Litten's back. Litten from something of the Daleks.
That one Dalek serial.
The last one we watched where Litten was in it. He is planning a diamond heist with these three other men. I forget two of their names. Or I forget one of their names. There's Sideburns guy. I don't remember his name because he dies fairly quickly. I think his name's Paynes. There's also Griffiths, who is a bald man. And there is Russell, who is secretly a cop. And also, Russell is played by Terry Malloy, who is Davros. And on the making of, he was like very excited to be playing like a cop and like a tough guy. And then he watched it and he's like, wow, that is not in my range, huh?
Oh, no.
He's like, I look like a little twerp. Just not at all threatening, man. And he's like, it's not, I'm watching it now and it seems like kind of funny, and that kind of works in its own way. Anyway, we don't know he's a cop yet, but he's supposed to get some explosives. And Litton's like, actually, you need to get it right now because we're pulling the heist today. And he's like, what? That's very short notice. He's like, you have a problem with it? You got anything else you're doing today? He's like, what if I can't get at the explosives? And he's like, well, you said you can get the explosives, so do it. He's like, all right, I'll go get them. And he calls in, and this is like the first clue, because he's like, he's moved it up and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, not sure if he's talking to the person that's going to get him the explosives or somebody else. He's talking to his superiors, I suppose, right? Because he's a cop.
Right.
And as he leaves to go make the phone call, one of the guys in the back, Litton, basically says, like, if anything goes wrong, you're going to kill that guy because he's being suspicious. And they're like, maybe he's not actually going to help us. And he's like, well, if that happens, you'll kill him. Also, this is the first time we hear, I guess, Litton's theme.
It's... Can you describe it?
Bad?
Nope, you couldn't do better than that.
It sounds like a cartoon theme song. Like a boom, 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 boom. If it was trying to be ominous and electronic. Like that. That's not it exactly, but that's what it... That's if, the no, mood.
If you took what Joe did and tried to make that sound menacing... That's it. That was pretty good.
And you'll hear it and subtle variations upon it 58 times.
And it never matches what's happening.
And every time you're just like, oh dear God, please stop. I would rather listen to the Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon over and over again before I listen to this.
You might be right.
I actually like the Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon. So anyway, heist is in progress. Meanwhile, the doctor shows Perry that they are following Halley's Comet to Earth in the year 1985. And Perry is not excited on multiple levels. First off, she's like, Earth? Really? I'm from Earth.
From Earth. I've been there.
But I think they're going to London, which she's never been to because she's American. And also, she's also like, Halley's Comet means disaster. Is it Halley or Halley?
I think it's Halley's Comet.
They say Halley, but that's, they're British, so I don't know. It's also spelled Halley now that I'm looking at it. And now I'm just wondering if I've just been mispronouncing it my entire life. Or maybe there is a Halley's Comet
and a Halley's Comet.
I don't know. I am not a smart man. But yeah, she's like very like upset about the fact that she believes in astrology. To be fair, she's not wrong. It does a little later be revealed that it is sort of foretelling disaster. Meanwhile, Litton takes everybody to the sewers. He's got like a little secret entranceway into the sewers. He's like, we're going to break into this place to get those diamonds through a sewer wall.
It is Halley, but everyone says Halley. Like everyone.
Oh God. So it's just one and it's Halley. It is Halley. So we're just stupid.
Wait, hang on. When your name is Halley and it gets mispronounced as Halley for 50 years. Anyway.
The
yes.
doctor says Halley, so.
It seems like it is very common to call it Halley's Comet.
Did it? Because that sounds better.
It does.
No offense to any of you Halleys out there. We know a Halley.
She's probably a Halley. Listening.
Hi, Halley, if you're listening. Sup? But Litton, he also flips a switch on a little, like, thing that I guess signals his two policemen to go on patrol. The two policemen from the previous Dalek serial, if you remember them, because they Litton ominously left with them at the end of that serial. Meanwhile, the doctor has picked up a distress signal from Earth, which is weird because it's, like, a galactic distress signal thing. Like, it shouldn't be coming from Earth. So they're like, it must be from an alien trapped on Earth, is what he assumes. He's wrong. So they're going to go figure out what the distress signal is while Perry's like, well, we shouldn't go. Meanwhile, Litton pulls out a gigantic gun and Russell's like, I don't like guns. Griffith is also, I believe, like, I don't like guns either. And this other guy's like, I like guns. And they're like, you just like money. And he's like, we're stealing diamonds. Hell yeah, I like money.
Heist drama.
Also, Litton just, throughout this whole serial, just drops, like, severe burns, like, left and right. Just insults galore throughout this whole thing. He gives one of them a big, like, what is it? The thing you swing that's got a sledgehammer. He gives them a sledgehammer or whatever. And he's like, oh, I used to work with one of these when I did whatever, construction work or whatever. And he's like, well, this time it's for work and not for leaning on, that sort of thing. And just, I don't know. Every chance he gets, he's like, Oh, by the way, fuck you. Meanwhile, the TARDIS lands in a very specific junkyard as farmyard music plays. Like that.
It's, you know, junkyard music.
Apparently, it is a play on Steptoe and Son, which is the British version of Sanford and Son. So, I did not know that until I looked it up on Wikipedia. But, I mean, I guess that makes sense as it's doing a little joke there. But not knowing that context, it seems very bizarre. Because I just expect to see chickens.
Well, especially when the thing that it's doing is like, we're back at the junkyard. Where it's like, now is...
So why are you doing it like a Sanford and Sons joke?
Yeah, now is not the time to make that joke, I don't think. You should be playing like the original score from the first episode or something, if that's what you're wanting to do.
It's also clearly not the same junkyard.
It's got the same sign.
No, it doesn't. That is not the same sign. The sign in the original was like a great big wall thing on
the
door.
Well, they're also there in
the future.
This
is like a dented piece of metal stapled to a piece of wood.
They're there in the future, so it's changed some.
I.M. Foreman is still there, though?
Yeah.
Anyway, they get out, and Perry's like, I thought you said it was gonna change. And then it does. It changes into a very ornate dresser. And Perry laughs at it. He's like, it's been a while since she's been able to do this, so give her a break. They're searching and looking for that signal. Perry complains about how unstable he is again and says that you've been calling me by so many names. Susan and Zoe and Victoria. And once you even called me Jamie. And he's like, oh, maybe my mind is playing tricks on me or whatever. And she's like, okay, but who's Zoden? And he's like, Zoden? Wow, I haven't thought of her in years. They don't make villains like that anymore. Which I think this is the second time they've brought that character up, and we have no idea who she is.
He's kind of like, man, Zoden was evil and hot.
I believe the second Doctor mentions Zoden in the Five Doctors, mentions him to Brig. Like, we fought that character, and the Brig's like, who are you talking about? And he's like, oh, yes, we haven't done that yet. So that's just a character we're never going to meet.
There's just Zoden.
So they look around for the signal and are followed by Lytton's policemen, who are just ominously behind them every once in a while. They wind up back at the junkyard, and the Doctor notices, because they found, like, the Doctor finds a house, and he's like, oh, I know what's going on when you get back to the TARDIS. And the Doctor notices the I Am Foreman sign, and he's like, Susan, look! And she's like, Perry! Damn it! She doesn't know what that means either, and he does not explain it. But they get back to the TARDIS, and it takes them a minute to be like, it's a dresser. How do we get back in it?
Where's the door?
And the Doctor, like, goes behind it, and then you just see his arm poke out and, like, gesture towards her.
I really, really love this joke anytime it's done. Because I can't help but wonder it. Like, the Master's TARDIS has been, like, a pillar before, and you're like, what does that mean? What does that mean?
It makes sense when there's like an obvious door on it.
Right. When it's like a box that you can enter, your brain's like, okay, that all checks out. When it's like a piano, you're like, is he crawling out of the top of the piano?
Oh, there's also like in the first, I think it's the first Doctor era, where the doors of the TARDIS open differently on the inside than they do the outside.
Yes. One of them swings in and one of them swings out.
So, yeah, that stuff always messes with my head.
But I like when the show is just, like, kind of playfully, like, pointing that out.
They're like, not going to show you the
door. No, they're just like, how do you think that works? All right.
We'll just go with it. So they get in and they TARDIS away. And the Doctor says that the signal is transmitting from that house he looked at. But the source of the signal is bouncing around from somewhere else. So they're going to try to find where that's from. They're going to wind up outside of where they went into the sewers, Lytton's crew. Meanwhile, one of the dudes, they were going through and they heard something. So one of the guys went to check it out. The guy with sideburns, Payne is his name. And he gets attacked by the Cyberman point of view. And I was like, no, he's the only one I visually recognize. But he dies. So the TARDIS lands and is now an organ that we, again, don't know how they get in and out of this big organ. And then a cute scene happens where the Doctor is he's still annoyed that it's, like, not actually blending in with its environment. And Perry is laughing at him. But then the Doctor plays a little bit on the organ, like, da-da-da-da, right? Something like that. And it's like, that's cute and everything. But then Perry just goes, shh! She's like super pissed off. She's
so angry all the time.
What the hell? Why? I don't understand any of her motivation for anything she does.
She just has a lot of emotion.
I don't know how much of it is bad writing. I don't know how much of it is bad acting. But it's none of it comes together. They're wandering around, looking around this like little sort of shop area or whatever. Workshop sort of area. And there's the hole for the sewer. And the doctor almost steps in it, but then does like a little goofy step over it, scaring Perry. Then one of the policemen pops his head up out of the hole. And the doctor comes over and he's like, the cop's got a gun pointed at them. And the doctor kicks his hand, stomps on his hand, and then just jumps on top of him and dives into the hole. And then you just hear like the sounds of fighting.
You just hear violence.
It's pretty badass. And like, I watched it again to make the gifs, and he just like goes straight down like fucking Batman. Then the other policeman shows up and threatens Perry, and she grabs like brick dust and throws it in his eyes and gets the gun away from him.
She gets that gun and just, I don't know, at any time she's holding that gun, like she puts it in her pants pocket. I feel like you could do something better with that. I don't feel safe with that in your pants pocket. I don't think you have any kind of gun safety training.
At this point, she's pointing at the cop, and then you see the other policeman hat start to rise out of the hole. So she points the gun at that, and then it's the doctor pops up. She's like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" He's like, "What? That was funny." And they handcuff the policeman to a wall. Later, we'll see that the policeman disappears, and it's like, where did he go? But we never see him again, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
And they head into the sewers. Oh, here's another classic slam by Litton. They're
classic Litton slam.
He's like, we need to bust through this wall. That's going to lead to where the diamonds are. And they're like, we need to take this wall down. And one of them's like, how thick is it? And he goes, less than you.
Oh.
Rude. That's Litton. He's just the master of the one-liner. Then they see a Cyberman coming down. And this is the only good piece of music in the whole thing because it's from another serial that like, perm, 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 perm. You know, the Cyberman music. The Cyberman's coming down the sewerway and one of them, I think Griffiths, shoots the Cyberman. And Litton's like, don't fucking do that. Stop. Because he wants to talk to the Cybermen. Like a door opens up and more Cybermen pop out. Basically in the wall that they're trying to tear down. And the Litton gives them the gun. Because there's only one gun. Gives them the gun. Cyberman breaks it in half. And he's like, I am your prisoner. I've come to be your prisoner. Hence my title for this episode.
Litton just really, really wants to work for evil robots.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess neither the Cybermen nor the Daleks are robots. They got organic beings inside.
And there's going to be a twist to this story, but it doesn't track.
But Joe doesn't care.
It doesn't track for me. It doesn't make sense. Because, like, he's a dick the whole time. He straight up worked for the Daleks. With no qualms about it. And killed multiple... It's whatever. Anyway. So the doctor finds the dead guy with sideburns. And Perry's like, what the fuck? This is a dead guy. We should leave. And the doctor's like, nah, it's an adventure. It's a mystery. We gotta find the killer. Just like, we should go to the cops. And he's like, yeah, well, we just got a dead body. They're not gonna care about a dead body. They'll want to know who killed the body. Let's go solve it. Adventure! And then Perry cries.
Here's what I don't understand about Perry. Anything. She's truly having such a miserable time.
Yes.
Which it seems like she is constantly. And this is going to sound terrible. Why doesn't she leave?
Right? We're in modern day Earth. Just leave.
Like, unless you're legitimately trying to, like, make a statement about, like, abuse. Which is definitely a situation that happens, right? Like, you don't.
Leave your abuser?
Well, it doesn't, like, occur... Like, you don't think you can. But I don't think that the... I don't think that this dynamic is intentionally that.
And I feel like, I mean, the sort of abusive angle is a lot less in this serial than it was last time. Because now it just seems like the doctor's having fun, and she's like...
She is not.
She is not. And that's fair, but also... Leave!
Right.
Like, he's not doing it in an abusive way now. He's just like, I want to go on this adventure. And she's begrudgingly going along. But I don't think there's any point where he's like, you have to do this.
I think the real thing is that, like her character is so non-existent, except for that, like, she doesn't like, except that she's there to be, like, antagonistic towards the Doctor and antagonistic towards, like, adventure, where it's like, what is your motivation for staying?
Well, I'm gonna be honest, I think it's that the writer is a huge misogynist.
I think you're probably right.
And I will describe why more later, based on something he said in the documentary.
All right.
But that's going
to
be...
That's not shocking to me. That I believe you.
Yeah, it seems like Eric Sayward's kind of a dick. Where were we at? Litton says he's tracked down the Cybermen. He wants to serve them. He's brought all these men here as gifts to be converted. He doesn't want to be converted, though, because he's special. There's one Cyberman who's like, this seems very sketchy and I don't buy it. But the sort of cyber leader there is like... checks out, but we'll leave it up to the head Cyberman, the cyber controller, maybe, on Telos. And then we cut to Telos, which is where the tombs of the Cybermen are, if you remember. And we see some workers.
Is there a good reason why the Cybermen are, like, on Earth at all? Because, like, the majority of the Cybermen stuff takes place on Telos, right?
Yes. I mean, it has to do with the comet.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They're trying to, they're trying to destroy Earth. So they're setting that up. But the plan is they're going to redirect the comet to crash into Earth and destroy it before it can destroy Mondas. They're trying to save Mondas.
Gotcha.
That's the whole plot.
That's everything that happens in this serial.
That gets doled out through the rest of the serial. But that's the gist. Which is not a bad thing because, like, I'm pretty sure that the first Doctor story in which Mondas is destroyed happened in 1986, which is a year out from this.
Right. Which is weird and interesting.
Yeah, I like that.
It's almost bizarre that, like, this show's been running so long.
The future's caught up.
Yeah, that it's like, okay, we're going to set this out in, like, the far distant future of the 1980s.
Really? That's 20-something years.
That's true.
It's not that distant, but yeah.
But, like, that the show has been running for 20 years is wild. That somebody went, oh, hey, that's going to happen this year.
So let's write a story about it.
Yeah.
I think that's really neat, actually. I don't mind that. There's people that complain about it, too, just because it's like, oh, it's just continuity porn. It's like,
It's interesting to me to, like, take a, especially with, like, time travel, to be like, we know that this is going to happen. And especially with something like a, you know, like an older story, because it's so easy. It's very easy to think about the show linearly, like beginning to end. You know, we watch like the first episode of the season and go through. And I like when we kind of point out that, like, I mean, it's a show about time travel. The stuff that happened earlier happened in the future. Like,
you know what I wish though? What? Since we're kind of going back to this, I wish we got some Mondasian Cybermen.
I don't. Oh, they scare me.
Yeah. I love them. The little sock Cybermen.
Oh, they scare me.
But we just had the same Cybermen we got in the last Cybermen serial. Oh, though, we'll get to him in a second. I don't have a lot of notes for him because all of his scenes are boring as hell. The cyber controller himself
has a weird head.
Well, he's played by the cyber controller, I think, from Tomb of the Cybermen.
Wow.
There's a lot of gross comments on the internet about how he is fatter than the rest of the Cybermen. I didn't notice. Also, that's rude. But his head does look like a podcasting mic. So his whole story this whole time is they just cut to him randomly and he's like, I'm going to say a line of exposition and then moves on. And that's it. He's just jack all this whole fucking serial. Because I just left him out of my notes because I was like, nothing that hasn't already been said is in these scenes.
He's not super important to the plot at all. I think he's really just there to be continuity.
Yeah. I believe even the writer was like, I didn't want to use him. He's like, it adds too many plots and it like lessens it. You're not wrong. So anyway, we're on Telos where we see some workers working on the planet, digging. I don't know what they're doing. I think they're like setting up. We later on, they're setting up the planet to explode. They're going to blow up the planet. But they have started an escape. Like, they fight some Cybermen. One of them has, like, this weird bat that he knocks the head off of a Cyberman.
God, these characters are great.
Their names are Bates and Stratton. And Bates is yelling at Stratton, get the head! Get the head! And he's like, what? And then the head explodes. Because, like, another Cyberman shoots it. And he's like, fuck! Well, let's get out of here. And, like, one of the guys that was escaping with them gets shot by a Cyberman. So it's just two of them. And he's just, like, super pissed off. He's like, we're supposed to have three of us because we need three to pilot a ship that we're going to take to get out of here. Also, we needed that head and you fucked up Bates is the most angry character in this whole thing, but it's like kind of delightful. Like, it's not terribly scary. It's honestly kind of funny.
There's that one scene, you made a gif of it, where he just goes, "This planet depresses me."
Very depressing to me. Oh, he's so good. Is that the line? I think I have it in my notes somewhere. Maybe I don't.
"This planet really depresses me." It's number 46.
The delivery of that line is so good. So that's Bates and Stratton, which is sort of your Robert Holmes comedic duo, but more yelly.
But more angry.
Again, Eric Saward in the documentary is like, "A lot of people said it was me doing Robert Holmes comedy duo, but that's just a thing. People do that all the time. I'm not ripping him off."
Lots of people do comedy duos, okay?
Get off my back. Russell, the secret cop, finds the doctor, finds him with a gun that he got from the dead guy, Sideburns guy, and he's like, "What's going on? Who are you?" And the doctor is really bad at sounding like he didn't murder that guy.
Everything he says is very suspicious.
It's borderline incriminating. He's like, "Where'd you get this gun?" "Found it." I'll just say, like, the person whose gun this is won't need it anymore. Like, dude, you sound like you've murdered this guy.
I'll just say, I murdered this guy and stole his gun.
Meanwhile, Perry cries. So, Linton and Griffiths are just sort of standing around watching Cybermen. They don't do anything for the rest of this episode because they're just going to Telos, I guess. Linton insults Griffith at one point because that's what he does. He's like, "I wonder why your ancestors decided to ever leave the primordial slime." And he's like, "Linton, that sounds like another insult."
I wonder it every goddamn day.
I don't even remember what that's in reference to, but I had to put it in my notes because I like that line.
I do like, yeah, his reaction too, of being like, "I'm starting to feel like you're trying to insult me."
Because we've also learned at this point that Linton is not human. He's from some other planet.
Which we already knew.
We already knew, but yeah. He told it to the Cybermen, and Griffith is like, "Woohoo." The Bates and Stratton are heading to Cyber Control. That's where we see the Cyber Controller for the first time. And he's been told that they have escaped. And he knows that they've escaped. And they're watching them. And he's like, "Well, let them go about their business so we can study and see how they're going to do it. It'd be a learning experience for us." So, we didn't say this. When the doctor was working on the chameleon circuit to fix it, he had a device that was not the sonic screwdriver, but it's a sonic lance.
What's the difference?
It's no difference.
Like, what is a lance?
A lance is one of the members of, I want to say, the Backstreet Boys.
Because when I think of a lance, I think of like...
Shit, or is it NSYNC?
It's NSYNC.
Damn it!
When I think of a lance, I think of like the big
thing.
The
joust.
Yes. Joust. Thank you.
But a lance could also be something that like a medical instrument.
What
right?
does that look like?
Like, isn't that like you lance like those big old zits? That's a verb. You like lance a boil or something. So, but that's not a noun.
So what do you think a sonic lance is? Like, what do you think it does?
It's a sonic device used primarily for cutting, according to the TARDIS wiki. Oh, the doctor used one in Robot.
I've Googled sonic lance to pull up pictures of it. It's 50-50 pictures of the sonic lance and pictures of Sonic the Hedgehog. And OC's named Lance.
It says the doctor's sonic screwdriver had a sonic lance as one of its removable heads. The fourth doctor used it to cut out a lock and Robot. I don't remember that. But apparently the sixth doctor uses it primarily because they're like, "Oh, right, we got rid of the screwdriver."
But he lost the head that's a screwdriver. He still has the head that's a lance.
Yeah, that tracks. That makes sense.
All right.
So anyway, Russell is going through the doctor's pockets and finds this lance. He's like, "What's this?" There is a missed opportunity to have him pull a bunch of shit out of the doctor's pocket.
Oh, he's a good gag.
But they do not do it, sadly. The doctor attacks Russell and takes his gun. He just like karate chops him and like, we were getting nowhere with me like up against a wall. And then he questions Russell, on which Russell reveals that he's a cop trying to track down Linton. Well, before he starts spilling the beans, he does say that he's a cop, but he was not going to give him any information. And the doctor's like, "I'm tired of this. Perry, shoot him."
Okay.
we have to.
I could see this scene being like a third Doctor scene.
Like a comedy bit?
Like a comedy bit, but it's Perry. Like, so it can't be comedy.
It could be a thing where like the Doctor and the companion both know what's going on. Where she's like, right, Doctor. Wink!
Except if the Doctor's like, no, really, shoot him. And Perry's like, but I can't shoot him. I've never shot anyone before. And like,
then she's like, okay, Doctor. And then points the gun at him.
Because like the Doctor is very clearly bluffing.
Yes.
But that's not clear to Perry.
Right.
And Perry is like weighing the moral implications of having to shoot this man. And the Doctor's like, ha ha, we're having a good time here. Like, it's awful.
It is bad. When is this gonna stop being a thing?
I mean, the man doesn't get shot, and I also feel like we should say.
Yeah, Perry just murders the police.
What would have happened if the Doctor was like,
what the fuck, Perry? Yeah. I was joking!
Perry, wink wink, shoot him. Okay.
Oh, but no, he's like, oh, I'll tell you everything, and then I'm gonna join your team. He's like, we're following down this guy, Litton, and the Doctor's like, oh, I know that guy. He was in that serial. And, like, he's been stealing equipment, and there's no records about this guy. We know his name for some reason, but, and his Doctor's like, well, it's because he's probably an alien. And he's like, what the fuck are you talking about? The Cybermen discover that they're in the sewers. They, like, see some, like, radar pings or whatever, and they're like, well, they must be turned into Cybermen. They don't know who they are yet. Griffith thinks they might be cops. And things seem to be not going well for the Cybermen. And Griffiths is like, oh, must be really tough, huh? Like, he mocks their voice. And then the Cybermen just comes and just presses his fists into the side of, like, just squeezes Griffith's head.
I believe that. Like, a lot of times where somebody's, like, lifting a styrofoam boulder and you're like, that's not very heavy. When he's squeezing his head, I'm like, oh my god, he's gonna crush him.
He's like, ah, ah! I may be jumping ahead a little bit, but it's a good scene.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Bates and Stratton knock the head off of another Cyberman after teasing him a bit. They, like, pop up and, like, the Cyberman shoots at him. And he's
like, oh, you looking for me? You want to shoot me?
He ducks and he pops back up. He's like, I don't have all day. And then Bates slides down this hill and goes, ah! And then knocks the head off. Head off the Cyberman. He's like, what are we going to do with it? What do you, you're happy now? You have a trophy. And he's like, nah. You scoop it out, and you can wear it.
Okay, here's the thing. The
fashion statement of the year.
That makes a lot of sense. They're doing a pretty standard thing. I'm very traumatized by the idea that they're going to scoop it out. There's a head in there. There's a head in it,
yeah. Also, just came right the fuck off.
Right.
Wasn't like he hit it with a bat.
It happens a couple of times, too. This is not the only time that like a Cyberman head just kind of like...
It happens at least 3 times in this serial.
Presumably, there are people with necks in there. What happened?
Do you mean in real life? They just murdered 3 extras. But yeah, it's a disturbing thought that they are going to scoop a head out of this helmet. Meanwhile, the Doctor, Perry, and Russell bump into a Cyberman in the sewer, and they're hiding from it around a corner. And then Perry and Russell are like, all right, then let's leave. And the Doctor's like, what, why? We should like try to fight it. And I'm like, how? And he gets the lance and he's like, was it watch, listen, learn? Something like that.
Right.
And then he goes and he just fucking stabs the Cyberman right in the chest with the lance. Wait, watch and learn. That's what it was. The Cyberman explodes. And then that's when Griffiths mocks the Cyberman like, things aren't going well, huh? And he gets his head squished. Oh, and before he goes out to fight the Cyberman, he pets his little cat pen again for luck. I think that's adorable.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's a nice little touch.
Nice bit of business.
He leaves the Sonic Lance in the Cyberman, by the way. He does not take it back out. They just leave.
This is why every so often the Doctor just stops having these things.
Because the Cyberman and Litton check out this destroyed Cyberman body, and Litton pulls the lance out of the Cyberman and gets the lance at this point. And he's like, oh, it must be the Doctor. The Cyberman like, the Doctor? And he's like, you know him? And they're like, yeah, this is great. We want the Doctor. Hell yeah. Well, specifically, they want his TARDIS. So the Doctor and everybody get back to the TARDIS. And surprise, surprise, there's Cybermen in the TARDIS. Russell proceeds to shoot one right in the face like 3 times, which is fucking hardcore. Like, there's a side. The problem is there's a side shot, right? Mm-hmm. You see him shoot the Cyberman, and like stuff blows out of the back of his head. And then it cuts to a shot from behind the Cyberman where there is no
where
hole.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. But there's a good joke where like they've downed the one Cyberman. Russell gets his gun. And he's like, "How does this work?" And then he just shoots a corner of the TARDIS.
He doesn't.
Like,
he goes,
"Oh, sorry." Then more Cybermen.
I think the doctor's like, it's fine. It happens all the time.
The more Cybermen stroll out from the door in the TARDIS, inside the TARDIS. And one of them just hits Russell in the head and he goes down.
Is this the scene, by the way, that like for a significant portion of it, Perry has a gun?
I don't think she has a gun. Maybe she does. I don't know. You know what? She does have a gun.
She has a gun and she's holding it, but she's...
doing nothing?
She's clutching onto it. Like, hugging it will protect her. And, like, the cliffhanger is, like, a Cyberman being like, we've got you. And Perry's, like, holding onto the gun being like, no! And it's like, you have the gun!
I didn't even notice that, but you're right.
She just holds onto it. Like, it's a stuffed animal.
To be fair, she did just see a gun used on a Cyberman with very little effect.
That is fair. But you'd think you'd at least be like, hey.
Here's the thing that
maybe
I
we're just
get.
Too American.
Maybe. So that Cyberman hits Russell in the head and he goes down. He just punches him in the head. And I thought he just got knocked out, but apparently he's dead. He does not show up in the rest of this serial.
He punched him so hard he died.
He was such a nothing character that I
forgot
about him by the time we started watching the second episode. But no, he's dead. Did you realize that?
I didn't even remember him.
Good, but that's goodbye to Terry Malloy. And yeah, that's the end of episode one. We're now into episode two, which I've called Spy of the Cybermen. So the Cybermen have surrounded Perry and she's like, no! And the doctor says, let's discuss this.
Again, holding her gun.
The doctor says, let's discuss this. And Perry goes, I agree. Which is a funny line, but delivered so whimperingly. Could you imagine Sarah Jane delivering that line? It would be much better.
Yeah.
Or anybody. I don't like this character. It makes me feel bad. I feel like I'm being misogynistic or something, but she's just bad.
I mean, there's this thing that happens where when you have, like, a female character written by a misogynist, your response to it is, like, in story, right?
Yeah.
You're like, this character is annoying, but it's all these things that, like, the writer put into it.
Right.
So you're like, this character is whiny, and you're like, I would never say these things about, like, a woman.
To be fair, I think definitely writing is a part of it, but I also feel like performance is a part of it. And I don't know how much of that is the accent. I think the accent's like fucking it up some too. Like,
it's
I think
it's taking her from emoting properly.
Yeah, it's taking all of her like effort just to stay in this voice, and it's like, because there are so many lines she delivers just the same. It's either boring and flat or crying, and that's her two modes.
I do think a lot of it is probably the result of trying to maintain that accent.
It's just a whole maelstrom of terrible decisions from writing, from the acting, from everything. Everything is coalesced
into the worst possible version of this thing.
So the doctor flips a switch and a countdown starts, and he's like, things are gonna explode if you kill Perry. And they're like, well, we won't kill Perry, so turn that off. So he does. And they're like, we're heading to Telos in the TARDIS. Meanwhile, Stratton dresses up as a Cyberman. They've scooped that head out. And he's like, this is not going to work. He's like, it's the only thing we can do. We're going to do the classic I'm your prisoner thing. He's like, why can't you wear it? And he's like, no, I don't want to. But like, they put the helmet on him and it looks so fucking pathetic.
It looks shitty.
And like, the music, this is the one music cue that actually works, where it's like, burp, burp. He's like slunched over and just looks like it's really fucking funny. So then there's like a 20 minute exposition scene. Like, no joke, I had digested nothing from this because it was just all characters discussing the entire plot. The doctor doesn't think Litton is a prisoner. He thinks he's a spy, and there's like some like, what's going on? Because basically they're captured. They're on their way to Telos. So they have time to discuss things. Litton gives the doctor his lance back as like a sign of like, trust me, I guess. The Doctor explains what Telos is. It's an adopted planet. It's not the Cybermen's home planet, because I think someone says it is. And he's like, no, technically that's Mondas. Telos is the planet they went to after Mondas, I guess. But this is before Mondas? I'm very confused. Anyway, they stole it from the Kryons because the Kryons were really good at refrigeration. They killed all the Kryons so they could get this really good refrigeration. And Perry says, that's a strange reason for genocide.
With, all the levity that she never had before.
Just takes a little bit of genocide for Perry to tell a joke.
I don't understand anything about any choice that was ever made here.
Then the Doctor explains about Mondas in 1986. And they're like, well, you know, there's something bad going to happen here. You got to stop it. And he's like, there's nothing I can do about it. It's already been done and it's fine anyway. Things turned out well. Mondas gets destroyed. It's fine. He's like, there's no way we could help them or whatever. And Litton says, just like you can't help the Kryons. And Perry's like, I'm not interested in the Kryons. And Lenton's like, well, that's compassionate of you.
And Perry's like, this cereal's boring me.
Then we find out the Cybermen have been reactivating frozen Cybermen from the tombs, but they're going rogue. Something's wrong with them. We'll see them later. They're just kind of got green shit on them. I think it's implied that the Kryons have been doing something to them. And they also smell like death. They smell bad. The Doctor tries to send a signal out because he's fussing around in the ship while they're being hailed. But then he gets massaged by the Cybermen and he turns it off.
Massaged?
Yeah, they grab his shoulders and he's like, and he goes down to his knees and he turns it off. That's another classic Cybermen move. Do you remember when the Cybermen massaged the fourth Doctor?
Oh, yeah.
He's like, bah! So good. Not quite as goofily done here, but it made me think of it. But the Doctor actually did do something. He redirected where the TARDIS was going to land on Telos. They were supposed to land at, the cyber controllers, whatever. But they instead land in the tombs. But the TARDIS materializes as a great big gate. That's got doors. That makes sense.
Oh, it's a shame nobody but patrons just saw what you did.
I pointed at you, ha-ha!
He basically gave me double finger guns. Pew, pew.
But yeah, they've arrived in the tombs, and the Cybermen are like, what the fuck? We should not be here. And they're like, why are they so freaked out about being in the tombs? Also, I want to point out that Perry is now dressed like Mario. Not Mario from the game, but Mario from the Super Mario Brothers movie from the 90s where Mario is played by Bob Hoskins, that I unironically enjoy the shit out of as a good movie.
Man, it's hard for me to find that outfit because when you Google Perry Attack of the Cybermen, it's like, you mean the pink thing. You mean the pink thing with the boobs.
No, it's like a red jumpsuit with a big belt on it.
When did she change?
They actually say she needs to change because it's going to be cold. So she changes on the TARDIS before they head out. The pink thing looks so uncomfortable.
It truly does.
But I really enjoy her Bob Hoskins era Mario jumpsuit. And then they're just standing there and there's just a Cyberman standing next to one of these walls. It's the tombs. It's the tombs from Tomb of the Cybermen, basically. Doesn't quite look the same, but he's standing there and just a fist pops out of the wall and knocks his fucking head off. Yet another Cyberman losing his head. The Cyberman busts out of the wall because that's another thing you got to do. You got to have the Cyberman busting out of the walls. And it's one of the rogue Cybermen and he's attacking another Cyberman. They're in the chaos. Everybody runs off. So the Doctor and Litton and Griffiths and Perry all get away during this sort of chaos. Perry almost gets grabbed by another rogue Cyberman that busts out of a wall, but is rescued by some Kryons.
Okay, honestly, frankly, the saving grace of this entire serial is the fact that these motherfuckers exist. They're amazing!
They're wearing white jumpsuits. They're all women. They have incredibly long fingernails. They have a crystalline.
They also all, or not all of them, but most of them have sweet mustaches.
One of them wanted hers trimmed because she's like, it keeps getting in my mouth. The mustache was to cover up a seam, basically.
Really?
Yeah, but it's still clear that they're wearing helmets. Like, their eyes are way sunk back, their mouths are sunk back inside this helmet thing. They just look like an icicle.
I love them so much. Oh my god.
Couple of notes. I think the people, the women playing them, are all kind of famous, but you can't tell. Because they're, one, buried underneath all this makeup. Two, they're all doing weird-ass voices.
They're basically shrink-wrapped. Like,
yeah. So you can't tell who any of them are. So, but they all do this, like, very...
Do the voice.
How, I don't... You do the voice.
I don't remember. I don't remember what they sound like.
They have a very... That's Cybermen. I don't know. They have a very lyrical sort of voice.
Yeah.
And the way they move is very fluid. And it's just a lot of interesting alien stuff. Now, here's where I'm going to prove that Eric Sayward sucks.
All right, I'm ready.
So, in the script, all of them were men.
Of course. All of them were men. That means that, like, there was no women in the script besides Perry.
Yes. The director is the one who suggested that they be women. He was like,
so that there
let's have women.
A woman in the serial?
Yeah, and I think he was specifically saying, like, it would be a nice contrast to, like, this, like, uber masculinity of the Cybermen with sort of the more feminine cryons or whatever, so, which is whatever. But apparently, Eric Sayward was like, in the documentary, he says, I don't understand why there was no, like, reason for them to be women. It didn't add anything to it. He's like, also, it's like, you're watching this and you're like, these women are going to defeat the Cybermen. It looks like they would break their nails and go home crying about it.
Ew!
So, fuck Eric Sayward. Douchebag. It was so gross. I was like, ugh.
When we were watching this, we mentioned about how it's credited to someone else.
Paula Moore.
And I was like, there's no way a woman wrote this. First of all, there are no female characters.
Other than Perry, who is not written well.
What was the one that we said was like the best one of last season?
Oh, Enlightenment?
Yeah.
Yeah. Written and directed by women.
We could have had that. We could have had more of that. But we did, okay, but we do get the cryons, and they are amazing, and they do have sweet mustaches, and I love them very much.
And they touch everybody.
They do!
There's one shot where it's just, later on, they're, like, just doing exposition at Perry, and it's a close-up of Perry, and you just, they're talking to her. She's not talking, she's just looking at them. And you just see their hands, like, stroking her.
Yes. I think if you go back and you watch, like, our stream of it, I think I'm like, is this hot?
Yep. One of the actresses was like, you'll see that we're like, touching everybody constantly. And then she's like, it's because we couldn't see where the fuck we were going. Couldn't see anything. Let's get into a little bit about what the cryons do in this serial.
Besides look awesome.
They do look awesome.
And stroke people.
So Lytton and Griffiths have sort of split up into their own little party, and they meet Threst, one of the cryons. I don't know why I wrote down their names. They're all pretty much interchangeable, to be honest.
I couldn't tell them apart, really.
There's one that looks slightly different, but she's only ever in scenes by herself, so yeah. I'm like, okay. But this is when we find out Lytton has come to help the cryons, not the Cybermen. This was all an elaborate ploy to get here to help the cryons. And Griffiths will be paid in a shitload of diamonds to help Lytton steal a time vessel. Because diamonds are just fucking everywhere here. She's like, this is like, I don't know, 10 million pounds in diamonds. Are you like, what? And she's like, yeah, I'm surprised you asked for so little.
Because they've got lots.
And he's like, what? Why me? And he's like, we were never going to just break into that place to steal diamonds, were we? And he's like, no, but would you have come otherwise? And he's like, hell no. But he's like, what do you want me to do? And he's like, same thing there. I want you to be my muscle, like my bodyguard. And he's like, why can't the cryons do it? And he's like, well, because they can't exist
outside of cold.
They're basically going to
still... I still don't get Lytton.
I don't either.
Because it's just like, oh, he's working for the cryons.
So he's good.
So he's good. But there's no justification there's no explanation.
He got their signal and then decided to help them. But it's also to help himself get off Earth, presumably. So, like, there's still, like, selfish motivation behind it.
Right.
I don't buy this redemption arc. And it doesn't help that he's a dick the whole time.
Just aggressively rude.
But I guess they're going to go steal this time vessel so that the Cybermen don't have access to time travel, I guess. Something. I'm not sure. Meanwhile, the Doctor actually has been caught by the Cybermen, and he is thrown into a freezer, basically. A freezer cell, where we meet Flast. Flast is another Cryon. The Doctor talks with Flast, who tells him that the Cybermen can't properly time travel. They have a time vessel, but they don't really know how to use it. But what their plan is that they're going to try and save Mont Doss. That's their plan. And the Doctor's like, you can't do that. That fucks with the time, and that's not cool. Meanwhile, Stratton and Bates find Litton and Griffiths, and they frisk them. Stratton and Bates frisk Litton and Griffiths, and they're like, they're flesh and blood. And Griffiths is like, what? What does that mean? And we find out that Stratton and Bates are partially Cybermen. They were like rejected. Like they did it and it didn't take.
Right.
He's got like a fucking robot hand. And then like Griffiths is like, ugh, robot hand, which is
rude.
Rude. But then he crushes his hand a little bit and he's like, ah. Well, I don't know why he did that. Just to be like, look how strong my hand is.
Just because he was being rude.
Oh yeah, that's true too. And then Litton convinces them to team up to join him in stealing the time vessel. And he's like, you need three to pilot the ship anyway, and there's four of us now. So let's go do that.
So now one of us is expendable, if you're keeping track.
Spoilers, they all fucking die. Every single one of them. What's the point of this? The Cryons wake up Perry. Like, I guess she passed out at some point. I don't know. And they're all just stroking her awake. And they tell Perry that Litton is working for them, and that the Cybermen are going to destroy Earth. They just start doing exposition.
It's like, just in case you're wondering, here's the plot of this serial real fast, because we've got other shit to do. Okay.
Flast is doing the same thing with the Doctor, telling him the same things, and like, the Cybermen are going to crash Halley's Comet into the Earth. And then the Doctor has this great scene where he's like, thinks that the Time Lords might have sent him here, like, masterminded him being a part of this, and he's like, the fuck? Why do you guys keep doing this? And he's just like yelling at the sky.
Leave me alone!
I'll do it anyway if you just fucking ask! Don't be weirdos about it!
I mean, he most definitely would not.
Yeah, that's true. But he does say that. He is like, why didn't you just ask me?
Use your words, Time Lords.
Stop tricking me into helping you, you assholes. Then Flash shows him this explosive mineral that's just in here for some reason.
That's just in the prison.
Conveniently.
The thing that she says is like, it's inert when it's cold, which is why they don't care about leaving it in here. But come on.
Awfully convenient.
I mean, most explosive things are inert until they meet fire. Like,
well, it isn't even fire. It's just,
they just, that's what I'm saying. They just need to get to like room temperature.
Like, right. Like, I think she says it needs to be raised 15 degrees and that, or maybe even 5 degrees, and that's enough.
This is what I'm saying. But you, dynamite on its own is fine unless there's some, unless there's a flame, but you wouldn't just leave it in a prison. Like, all right, well.
Thing is, we gotta wrap this cereal up,
we're gonna,
you know?
Store these two things in the same location, and I see no way this could go wrong.
Right? Let's just put our prisoners in there with the means of their escape. Litton and those people are going to the time vessel. Litton gets grabbed by a Cyberman as he climbs a ladder, and the rest are like, only need three. Bye! And they leave Cyberman to be leave Litton to be taken by the Cyberman. The Doctor uses his lance to open the cell door, which they also just threw him in there with his lance. And he opens the door, throws that mineral stuff out there, shuts the door, and the guard comes up like, what's this then? And then blows the fuck up.
Because of course that's what happened.
So Flast is like, I can't go with you because it's too hot out there for me. I'm just going to do a self-sacrifice while you escape. And he gives her the lance, so she's going to put it in the mineral to explode it. Also, I forgot, there's like a really good joke where he's like, how much of this do you need? Like, he does a whole scoop. Well, first off, he's like, what is this? And scoops it, and she's like, it's very explosive. And he immediately dumps it out. But then later, she's like, how much of this do you need? And he gets a whole scoop, and she's like, just a handful will, like, do this much damage or whatever. Or just the amount you have there is enough to take your hand off.
I don't even think it's enough to take your hand off. I think it was, like, it's enough to, like, blow this whole thing up.
Yeah, so he just, like, dumps half of it out. But anyway, yeah, she's going to stick the lance inside the thing and then warm it up and then blow up the whole place.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Cryons are taking Perry to the TARDIS because they want her to take the TARDIS out of the equation because they don't want the Cybermen to have it. And she's like, I can't fly it. And they're like, well, then we'll probably have to destroy it or something. Meanwhile, the most fucked up scene happens in this entire thing. The Cybermen proceed to torture Litton for information, and they do this by squeezing his hands until they bleed.
And they do bleed.
They bleed a lot. Apparently it was going to be much worse. And the director was like, let's film a version that's a little less fucked up.
Really?
Yeah. There was going to be like more gore and more like bones and stuff. It was going to be way worse.
Oh my gosh. So. I can't imagine that because it like, what it was like upset me. It's sometimes that's a thing where like, it's just like the context of it, you know? Like if I was watching like a horror movie, that wouldn't have messed me up. But like in a...
It's Doctor Who.
Yeah, in Doctor Who, we were like, oh, that looks like he's really hurt.
And I'm like, they've done gross and gory stuff before, but it's...
It was in an era, though.
Well, I mean, even recently, they have like aliens that like melt and all this stuff. But like, I think the fact that it's human hands... Basically, I mean, he's technically not human, but it's blood. It's just blood, you know?
Right.
Like, it's something, like, it's one thing for, like, a creature to be oozing green shit. It's something else when it's like, that's just fucking blood. You know what I mean?
That's definitely supposed to be inside you.
That's something you could see in real life if you wanted. Well, not if you wanted
if
to.
If you wanted like, to.
If you, like, you wouldn't want to, but you could see it, and it would be messed up.
If you messed up bad enough.
Yeah. It becomes more real than if it's just like an alien goose. Anyway, the time vessel lands. The doctor meets up with the Kryons and Perry. But the TARDIS is full of Cybermen, so he finds that dead Cyberman, the rogue one that the Kryons killed, and sets off a distress signal in its helmet to flush the Cybermen out of the TARDIS. Meanwhile, Flast has put that thing in the box of minerals, so it's heating up. It could blow at any second. Flast is pulled out of the cell because, like, there's a dead Cyberman there, and also the doctor is gone, and they're like, what's up? I'm questioning her, and they pull her out of the cell, and are like, we're not going to put you back in until you answer our questions. So she just proceeds to melt to death. It's fucked up.
It is messed up.
She's just like, I will never tell you. And then dies as she's melting. It's fucked up. Gross. Then Bates, Stratton, and Griffiths get to the time vessel. Bates tries to open a door and is electrocuted, dies. And then Griffiths and Stratton are shot by Cybermen. So they're all dead.
Pointless.
And we see a shot of the Cyber Controller talking to another Cyberman. And they're like, they're all taken care of. And they're like, cool. And then they part ways. And when their heads slide apart, you see that Litton is inside a device being converted into a Cyberman. So things are... Fuck for all them. Then there's a shootout between Kryons and Cybermen as the Cybermen leave the TARDIS. And they're like, the doctor's like, all right, well, let's get in the TARDIS and go. And Perry's like, but we have to help Litton. And he's like, why? And she's like, because he was helping the Kryons. And he's like, oh, okay, well, let's go help him.
Just like the response the doctor has is like, I really misjudged that guy. And he's like, did you? There's never like a moment where you're like, oh, his motivations, like, as a character now make sense to me. It's just like, remember the bad guy from the last one? Well, he's good now.
We're not gonna tell you why.
How do you feel about that, huh?
But you feel bad for thinking he was a bad guy.
Yeah, you messed up. No, he did terrible things. He was a bad guy. And then he did good things. That's not the same as like, whoa, you misjudged this guy.
How much good shit did he really do?
Not that much. His good shit mostly involved tricking a bunch of people.
And then getting them murdered.
And then getting them murdered.
He stole a bunch of shit on Earth, got some criminals involved, and then got them all murdered. What a hero.
What a good guy.
So the Doctor and Perry get in the TARDIS. The TARDIS materializes in the lab where he's being converted. It is now the police box. It has changed from the gateway to the police box. The Doctor tries to help Litton, but Litton says it's too late. And asks the doctor to kill him.
And the doctor does, just like he did with his good friend Chameleon.
No, he doesn't.
No.
He's like, no, I must save you.
Just like he did with his good friend Chameleon.
No, he murdered that companion. So the Cyber Controller enters. The doctor slips Litton some sort of stabby thing. I don't even know. Like a piece of metal or something. And then Litton stabs the Cyber Controller a whole bunch as he's dying. More Cybermen enter. The doctor shoots them all. It's very violent. And then he goes back over to Litton, and Litton is already dead. And the doctor's like, why did he never say anything? And Perry's like, you never gave him a chance. And then they get in the TARDIS and leave. The lance explodes, destroying
nothing has ever been more unearned.
The episode ends with the Doctor going, like, things didn't go great. And she's like, well, you know, the day was saved and whatnot. And he's like, no, I mean on a personal level. I don't think I've ever misjudged anybody quite as badly as I did Lytton. End of episode. Misjudged him how? He's still not a great guy. He's basically a mercenary for hire.
Correct.
Who worked for the Daleks.
Correct.
And now he's just working for the Kryons.
Correct.
He had a better choice between, I guess, the Kryons and the Cybermen, so he chose the Kryons. But he still worked for the fucking Daleks. Like, you can't just work for the Nazis and then go like, well, I was hired by the Nazis, but now I'm working for these other guys and they're cool, so I'm cool, right? You've misjudged me.
No, actually, we judged you correctly based on your behavior.
So that's the end of Attack of the Cybermen. we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back for final thoughts.
All right, let's do it.
DragonCon 2021 is scheduled for Labor Day weekend, and whether it's an in-person event or once again goes virtual, the DragonCon Report podcast crew will cover the con right up to the big event.
So sit back with your bucket of rum, dragon's mead, apple pie, or whatever your beverage of choice, and tune in to the latest news, notes, interviews, discussions, and even a dragon tale or two on the DragonCon Report, a proud member of the ESO Network. Check us out at DragonConReport.com.
And we're back. Tony, do you know what time it is?
I believe it is.
Yes.
Roughly.
Uh-huh.
The time in the podcast.
Yeah.
And the day.
Right.
Where?
We.
Do this bit.
And then what does that bit ultimately result in?
You getting very frustrated, me being mildly amused. I assume
that
the audience...
Isn't enough amusement for you to do it every single time?
It is. It actually like multiplies. Actually gets more enjoyable the longer it goes on.
We've only got like 2 more seasons of this, right?
Hey, you roped me into doing this, all right? So you let me have my simple pleasures.
Okay. Oh, what? Tony, you know what time it is?
It's time for final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
This serial is fine. It's not as bad as the last one. It's not actively antagonistic towards me as a person. So it's got that going for it. It's watchable. The crayons are great and amazing. Like, they're a great design. They're a good concept. I'd like to see them in a different story. In something that was better written. I mean, here's the thing. A lot of stuff is broken right now. Perry's not a person. She doesn't do things in a way that make any sense. And that's, like, it's hard to watch. 6 feels like he could be fun. If I could, like, see him in a different context. And then the writing of this is... okay. I mean, I kind of already said all my complaints about it, right? Like, there are no female characters, and supposedly there are no female characters because it's like, well, what would that do? What would you gain by having there be a woman?
What would you gain from it being all men?
Right. People who think like that, what they think, and I actually think, what's his face? The creator of BoJack Horseman.
Yeah.
Which talked about this, that like, he realized he was doing it, which was...
The men as default?
Yeah, you're thinking about not just as default, but as like neutral, right?
Right.
And if you're adding things to a joke or a scene or a piece of writing, it's about like being economical almost, right? Where it's like, well, why would I do that? Why would I not just keep it as neutral as possible unless there's like a specific reason why this character has to be a woman? And it's like, because that's not actually how people work. Like, it's not a extra thing because... men aren't neutral. Give me his name. Raphael?
Bob Blacksburg.
Yes, thank you. One of the things he was saying was that, like, you don't notice that you think that. And that, like, literally someone just challenged him on it and was like, why do you think of, like, this character being a woman as being, like, extra or, like, something added to it? And he was like, oh, shit, I don't know. That's kind of messed up, isn't it? And, like, after that point, there was, like, a lot more, you know, just sort of, like, background female characters and stuff.
I don't think Raphael Bob Waxberg would add on. I mean, they'd break their nails and cry about it.
No, and that's what I'm saying. Even if you're not, like, you know, actively misogynistic, it's a way of thinking that can be default if you don't challenge it. And so it's... I forgot why I was saying all this. I forgot what the point was. But the was one of the complaints that I had about it, is that it does fall into that. Not even in like a benign, oh, I didn't really think about it way. Like in an actively bad way. It's just fine. I was trying to come up with more to say other than like, it's basically acceptable. I don't have a lot of strong feelings about this cereal.
Is that your final thoughts?
Yeah, I guess.
I feel similarly. I don't think it's bad. I think it's better than the Twin Dilemma, for sure. I feel like the Doctor is way better in this one. Like, there may be a couple of instances of him being mean, but, like, for the most part, it's the Doctor being the Doctor, and I am down for that. I think part of the problem is that Perry is still reacting like she was in the last serial. Even to things that are nothing. Like, he plays the organ and she yells at him. Like, I don't understand any of her reactions. I mean, you could say, like, well, she was, like, basically abused in the last
serial. She's traumatized now.
Yeah, but, like, I kind of want to not think about that. And, like, this serial doesn't play it like that. She's playing it like that.
Right. If that's what's being done, it's not being done competently.
Like, I don't think it's being done consciously.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't feel like there are choices being made at all of, like, we should do the, you know, we should tell a story about this. It feels like everything just almost happened on accident.
It almost feels like it happened on accident, and it's also, everything's happening separately. Nothing, like, meshes or gels. It feels like Colin Baker and Nicola Bryant are acting in two separate things that have been spliced together.
It does.
It just doesn't make sense. I want to say, which is weird because, like, from what I've heard, like, Colin Baker and Nicola Bryant are, like, get along really well. And they're, like, good friends and stuff. And it's like, why are you two acting not with each other? But yeah, I kind of like all the continuity stuff in this because at least it's doing something. I like the, you know, bringing back that Mondas plot. I even like the little junkyard thing. Like, again, I feel like this feels like a better introduction to this Doctor than the last one does because of all of the sort of callbacks to not only, like, the first episode of the first Doctor, but the last episode of the first Doctor. So it feels like thematically relevant,
right,
to sort of be referencing the first Doctor and, like, this is a new Doctor and, like, sort of referencing the past, referencing not just beginning of them but the end of them as well. It's sort of like, I don't know, that feels right to me somehow. It's a problem that it's the second serial of this Doctor, but it is the first serial of this season. So that also helps. They could have done more with it. Like, there's ultimately, like, very little point to anything. Like,
I mean, that is the big thing about this serial.
There's just been this tendency to kill everybody in all of these serials lately, and it's getting a little monotonous. Like, what's the point of Bates and Stratton? What did they add to this serial? Nothing. There was a couple of workers who broke loose, then died. They don't do anything. They don't contribute to the plot, to the resolution, to anything. Honestly, Lytton and Griffiths don't either. I mean, they get the Doctor there to help the Kryons take out the Cybermen. That's true. So that kind of them doing something, but not really anything. But especially Bates and Stratton. I like Bates and Stratton. I thought their plot was interesting.
They're fun to watch.
But it shouldn't have ended like that. It shouldn't, because that's just like a waste. Like, what's the point? What's the point if they don't do anything? If they don't accomplish anything? Why did you have these characters? They serve no purpose. Well, there's not even like a thematic reason for it. It's just like to be edgy.
That's the thing that I think is, like, really probably going to be bad about this whole era. Is it doesn't seem like, you're saying, like, why? What's the point? It doesn't seem like there's a lot of thought put into any of it, right? I mean, this is kind of a complaint that we've had about the current era of Doctor Who, is that, like, there are all of these pieces because those are the pieces that go into Doctor Who, but there's no thought about why. There's no thought about, like, why do I want, what do I want to tell a story about? Why do I want to tell a story about that? Why am I choosing these particular pieces, you know, and how do they fit together? Because there's no thought into the cohesion, right? There's no thought of, like, how do I mesh all these ideas together? It's just like, well, this is how it works. There are Cybermen because there are Cybermen, you know, there are these pieces because that's what goes into it. But there's not like there's not a why behind anything.
I mean, I feel like there's enough elements there to do something. I think there's a solid plot, a solid structure.
Yeah.
With, like, you know, I mean, the goals are pretty clear. The Cybermen want to destroy the Earth to prevent the destruction of Mondas. That all makes sense. The Kryons make sense, even. Like,
cool
Kryons,
as hell, too.
They were the people who lived on this planet before the Cybermen. Cybermen came and almost wiped them out, and it's just them trying to get their planet back. Bates and Stratton, nothing. There's no point. There's nothing. Like, it's to show some fucked up shit the Cybermen did, I guess. But, like, ultimately, you take them out of the story,
it's the same.
Nothing changes. It's the exact same. And honestly, almost the same with Litton. Like, you just have the Doctor find the Cybermen, like, striking down that signal. It's the same story.
I don't understand. Like, they tried to do this thing in a way where, like, they didn't even earn it. So, like, yeah. The one thing that they were interested in doing was being, like...
Litton, not bad, huh?
Like a story about, like, the Doctor misjudging somebody. But that's not in there at all. They do absolutely nothing to tell that story or to earn it at all. And it's just like, oh, he's good now. Okay? Why? Like...
Because he was coming here to help the Kryons get their planet back. But we don't know why he's doing that. We don't understand why he's doing that.
There's no thought given to why.
You're just supposed to accept that, oh, he's good. That's why he's helping them. But, like, we don't understand why. Like, you never see that change. Like, he worked for the fucking Daleks. And, like, honestly, if you think about it, the only thing you can sort of come up with is the fact that he's using this to get off the planet. And also, he's getting a shit ton
of
diamonds.
So many diamonds.
It still seems selfish. It still seems like he's the same dude throughout the fucking Daleks. He just got a better deal from the Kryons, honestly, than he did from the Cybermen. I don't buy it. It's bad. I think, literally, Eric Saber just had the idea of, like, ooh, wouldn't it be interesting if he was actually good? But then was like, that's it. That's the idea. And then didn't develop that. Didn't. He wrote it like, well, I know he's good, but didn't do anything to earn it. He just has him be the same dick and then goes at the end, oh, he was good. Surprise. He was good. Why?
It's a twist.
Good. Yeah, it's a twist.
No. You can't just lie to the audience.
I sound so angry. I watched the episode and I had a good time. But I'm like so pissed now thinking about it. Like, fuck this cereal. It's garbage.
This is what I was saying when I was like, it's fine. Because when you're watching it, you're like, I was entertained enough. But then you spend like any time thinking about it and you're like, wait a minute. Actually, fuck this. Actually, fuck this and I'm angry now. That is what this cereal is. If you turn your brain off and watch it. You'll be entertained for...
The Kryons are fun. Brace and Stratton are fun. The Doctor's fun. The music is bad.
Perry is bad.
The Litton reveal is bad.
Just don't...
I even enjoyed Litton being like an asshole.
Yeah, it was fun to watch. No. The two characters who don't do anything are enjoyable to watch. But if you spend any time thinking about, like, thinking about it as a constructed thing, it becomes infuriating.
Like, I didn't even realize, like when we set out to record this podcast, I did not know I was going to be this angry about it.
No, in fact, I was kind of like, I don't know what this episode is going to be like, because we watched this, like, 2 weeks ago, and it was, like, an okay episode. So it's not like I have any strong feelings.
And we're like, this will just be, like, a basic episode. And at the end, we're like, rah! Get your shit together, 1985 Doctor Who! God damn it.
I do think there's something to be said about, like, it's a lot more infuriating for me to watch something that is, like, has all the pieces to be really good, but isn't, than, like, something that's just bad. If something's just bad, you can enjoy that on its own. Or you can just be like, wow, that was a terrible episode. Everything has terrible things because stuff goes wrong, weird deadlines happen, and you just have to get things done. Every production has that, and it's easy to, like, write that off. It's a lot more frustrating when you're like, look, there was competence here. There was competence here, and then what happened? I don't understand where it all went wrong. And that is almost more frustrating than if it was just like, yeah, it's pretty, that was a, you know, boring one, it was bad. They did a bad job.
Right.
It's a lot more frustrating to be like,
you
have all the pieces here. You just didn't put them together right. Why? That's it. We're done.
That was Attack of the Cybermen. Before we go, anything we need to plug?
Unseen World. See Unseen World everywhere. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at See Unseen World. All of those things.
And I'll just say again, check out thedip.com, D-I-P-P. Go to the Doctor Who articles. There's only one up right now, and it's mine. So check out The Fallacy of Doctor Who. And if it's up, check out Star Wars Younglings. It may be behind a paywall. It is like you have to pay like $5 a month. But there is like you can get free articles by just signing up for their newsletter. So if you do that, you can see at least one of them, maybe both. I'm not 100% positive of how that website works. I just write for it. But if you like this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on watchyourassalon.com. And if you'd like to help us out, leave a review on iTunes. Do it.
Please.
Say nice things about us. Or say bad things about us.
I just really...
But not as many as you say good things about us.
I just really need someone to be talking about me.
Us specifically.
No, me specifically.
Okay. You can also become a Patreon patron at patreon.com/watchathon, or you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing a DVD or Blu-ray from our Amazon wishlist at watchyourassalon.com/support. We'll mention you on the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassalon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
Check him out at matthewgolden.net. And I want to give a special shout out to Vincent E.L. for providing us with our delicious theme song.
Okay. Thank you, Vince.
Check out more of their music at soundcloud.com/VincentEL or VincentEL.bandcamp.com. And tune in next time when we talk about vengeance on Varos? Varos? One of those two. There's certainly vengeance to be had there. Until then, keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way.
Like you, this planet really depresses me.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.